Like a lightning bolt to the anus. It's the Punk News Podcast, episode 394. See, here's the thing about having your own podcast is that you can say whatever stupid shit you want. And, you know, who's going to tell you no? Listeners? Don't have any power. What can they do? Unsubscribe? I dare you. Come on. Unsubscribe. See, you won't. Because you're lazy. That's right. Hi, I'm Adam White. I'm recording here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. This is the Punk News Podcast. It's a podcast where we talk about things that happened quasi in relation to punknews.org and in the wider world of music over the past week. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile, out of parts of the East Coast that have been prominently in the news lately.
I was doing a full day presentation with my firm about certain legal issues regarding certain types of clients.
Punk rock clients?
No. However, I actually am representing a punk rock client right now, and I've got a very, very interesting thing to talk about, but I'm not even being cute here. I can't talk about it without his permission, so I'll ask him, and maybe I'll talk about this. This is an extremely interesting area of law regarding – well, I can speak vaguely – regarding trademarks and what is considered offensive with regards to a trademark, and is offensiveness still a bar to something becoming registered in the USPTO. I might go to the Supreme Court, Adam.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Holy shit.
I probably will not, but it is within the realm of possibility. I have standing to challenge all the way up to the Supreme Court, along with a group of other trademark applicants. What if I went in front of the Supreme Court and argued offensiveness in trademarks?
I mean, what if you did, and then like, you know, like Gorsuch or something, like all of a sudden like cuts you off mid-speech, and he's like, on episode 395, why did... He just starts asking you like why didn't you appreciate that Menzinger song more, and that is the issue that derails your whole fucking thing. That's what I want.
And I can't appeal because it's Supreme Court. I can't say why they're talking about Menzingers. I got nothing.
You're not allowed to talk back to them?
Well, you are allowed to talk back to them, but let's say the Supreme Court ruled against me just because I don't like the Menzingers. I can't complain to anybody because it's the Supreme Court. You know, appellate level judge said, I hate you because you don't like the Menzingers, denied, then I can appeal to the Supreme Court in the federal level. But at the Supreme Court, the federal level, that's the end of the road.
You'd get there and you'd be like, this appellate court threw up my case because the Menzingers. And then Ginsburg is like, on the impossible pass ruled. Fuck you, John. And then you got nothing. What do you do? You appeal to God, I guess. You're out of options, right?
Help me, Jesus. Help me with this trademark case about offensiveness.
Also on tonight's show, probably not at risk of being disbarred by things he says here, is Mr. Greg Simpson in Lafayette?
Hello. Press a blue key.
Could you hear that?
I did. What was that weirdness?
I've got my... Okay, this is my 1985 Texas Instruments speaking music. Let me try this again. Ready? Oh, okay.
Hello.
There we go. Okay. I was hoping to do this whole thing where like I could pretend to be a robot, but it only says like a few words. So that
this is because Stephen Hawking died. You're like yeah. Stephen Hawking died, so I can mine his form of speaking as a comedy thing.
Yes, I will take over that bit. He was just doing a bit, right?
Yeah, it was like a really long play. Stephen Hawking was really Andy Kaufman this whole time.
What?
Where do you live? Is it Lafayette? Was I right?
Yes.
I see. I usually Lafayette. Make up some bullshit like Bloomingburg, but you don't actually live there anymore. So.
Half the towns start with green something. So Greenville or Greenstown or Green Farm. I don't know. Yeah. All our names are boring or stolen from European cities or countries, and then we mispronounce them.
You either steal them from European cities or like you steal them from the indigenous people on whose land you've trampled, right? So it's one or the other.
Oh, yes. Like the guy with the name Lafayette, I think he was French, but we stole it from like the Wia Indians, I think mostly.
Well, that's the thing is like I'm right near Western New York, and everything in Buffalo is you know some like Native American name that they've taken and repurposed for all these little towns, and it's crazy when you actually go and look at it, and you're like the entire like linguistic history of this area. It completely comes from whoever lived here before, like, the white dude showed up. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, get this. When we moved up from Bloomington, which is the actual name of the place I lived before, a real estate agent was taking us around looking at places, and there's one place in West Lafayette, that's where Purdue is, where my wife works. There is a whole neighborhood where all of the street names are Native American tribe names, and she called it, she called the neighborhood the reservation. And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Wait, the real estate
Why
agent?
Why would you say that? Who calls it the reservation? And where can I find them and punch them?
Ooh,
is that awful?
That's pretty awful. So speaking of awful things, John, you were hanging with Mr. Cooper.
I was hanging with Mr. Cooper. For the first time I saw the Alice Cooper band. I've been a fan of Alice Cooper for about 20 years, and I got into him through the box set, and I've been wanting to see him for 20 years. He never plays the Philadelphia area because he's got a grudge against it for some reason. I think the reason he doesn't play the Philadelphia area is because a lot of bands skip Philadelphia because of union activity and that kind of a thing, and it costs a lot to play Philadelphia. So Alice Cooper usually plays Atlantic City or out in the middle of nowhere, like the Poconos or something. I did see him once before in his Hollywood Vampire group, which is him, Joe Perry, and Johnny Depp covering the Hollywood Vampire, like songs by the Hollywood Vampires. So Keith Moon songs, Ringo Starr songs, Harry Nilsson songs, that kind of stuff, Led Zeppelin songs. And it was cool. It was cool. It was in the casino. But, it was just kind of – you can't fall for it. It's Alice Cooper says, we're just going to hang out and play some tunes, and if you want to come, you can come. And I went, and it was cool. But I've never seen the Alice Cooper group do Alice Cooper – well, not the Alice Cooper group. I've never seen Alice Cooper and his band do Alice Cooper songs. And I went – it was in – I can't remember. It was like outside of Allentown or something. And Alice Cooper is 70, and I didn't know if it would be good, bad, or whatever. I thought it was going to be, all right, but kind of show busy. So he comes out, and the first song he does is Brutal Planet, which is a song from like 2000 when he was kind of flirting with nu metal, even after nu metal was kind of passe. And the first song was all right. And also, let me tell you, people, it was in a small theater, probably about 1,000, 1,500 people. The crowd was not a youthful crowd. Like, even if you go see, like, Judas Priest or, like, Black Sabbath, it's all ages. But for Alice Cooper, for some reason, it was not a youthful crowd. So anyway, Alice comes out, and he's 70, mind you, and it was a cool song. And then he just, for some reason, after that first song, which was like from the 2000s, I don't know why he opened with it. I guess maybe the point was to do something interesting and unique, which it was unexpected. So that's admirable. Then he just starts busting into the classics. And I'm like, oh my God, he's freaking great. Then about four songs in, he busts into a Halo of Flies, which is like this weird ass, like 7 or 8 minute song from like 1973, I think, off the Killer album, which is like super, it's proto-goth is clearly what it is. And they blew it up to like this 12-minute song, but instead of doing like a Kiss thing where they do a whole bunch of like stupid solos and shit, they actually did like this weird like musical sound clash thing. And like the song's about like Alice Cooper planting time bombs and submarines and walking across water and just being like this weird creature. And after that song, I'm like, oh my God, that's even not at 70, but he is 70. Like, Alice Cooper is amazing live. His voice sounds so good. They did Billion Dollar Babies. His growl was perfect. Later on, they did the ballad, Only Women Bleed. And, like, he went from the growl to, like, a beautiful, soulful, deep voice. Most singers that, have growly voices lose their voice when they get to be about 45 or 50. But I don't know what the Coop is doing, but he sounds fantastic. And the band, they were all dressed like Slash for some reason. Like, when you watch Making the Band or whatever, like Hollywood set dressers thinks everyone still dresses like Motley Crue from 1988. Like they have like the torn jeans and like the the terrible tattoos and the spandex. And that's like what a Hollywood person thinks rock and rollers dress like. But rock and rollers haven't dressed like that since Motley Crue. But for some reason, all of Alice's bandmates, except for him, were dressed like that. And I thought that was a little cheesy, but irrelevant, because they just sounded so good. Like they played super fast, super energetic versions. What I did like, the stage show actually wasn't that big. Alice Cooper pretty much invented the rock stage show, but they played that down in favor of just playing like his incredible discography, and it was so great. And then near the end, this was really cool. Near the end, they did this song called Killer, which is, it is a song, but it's not like a song, it's not a metered song. It's just basically like these weird, weird songs. So they start doing this song, and they bring out this guillotine, and they put Alice in the guillotine. His head's moving, and then the guillotine blade comes flying down and chops off his head. Some guy holds up Alice Cooper's head. It's not really him, obviously, but it was moving. It was moving just before guy cut. I mean, it was magic. And magic, but they did a really good job of making it look like it was really him. Then after his head gets chopped off, the band starts singing one of his classics called "I Love the Dead," which I thought was really cool. And then he came back and did his encore, including "School's Out" with Pink Floyd's "Another Brick in the Wall" weaved in, which was really cool. The point being is, I know people diss on Alice Cooper. I know Adam was kind of sitting on the fence because he listened to the Killer album. I was hoping Adam would love it. I think Adam liked some of it and thought some of it was too 70s rockish. Adam, I'll let you respond. But oh my God, this was probably one of the top 10 shows I've ever seen, and he's 70. Maybe not top 10, but like maybe top 20. Like I've seen a lot of shows. This show, like, I wanted to see it again right away as soon as it was over. I'm going to see him again this summer. He was so amazing live. I always say the Rolling Stones are the Rolling Stones, not because they've been around a while. The Rolling Stones are the Rolling Stones because they're freaking Rolling Stones. Alice Cooper is Alice Cooper because he's Alice Cooper. Like, just the talent and the skill. And also, a lot of bands have been around a while. They kind of, like, fall back into showmanship and, like, kind of like the Las Vegas thing. It still felt like a live, raw, vibrant performance. And it was just awesome. And the Coop lived up to my dreams, Adam. It was amazing. It was worth a 20-year wait. I wish I'd seen him sooner.
Does anyone really call him the Coop other than you?
Yeah, a lot of people call him the Coop. He calls himself the Coop. That actually comes from the School's Out album, okay, where he says, "You won't forget the Coop, will you?"
How about Mr. Cooper? Are you the only one that calls him Mr. Cooper?
Well, I think Adam...
That was my note before the show.
Okay.
I know much more about the TGIF lineup of the 90s than I actually do rock and roll. So I'm just faking my way through all this. John, did the head sing?
I don't know, because like the mouth moved, the executioner held up the head and the mouth was moving. But I don't know. Oh, I got to mention one other thing too. But I don't know if any sound was coming out of it, because like six people at once were singing "I Love the Dead." So I couldn't tell if there was like sound coming out of the mouth or whatever.
I mean,
however, also, oh,
no,
go ahead,
just
Adam.
Like if instead of him coming back out for his encore and playing "School's Out," if they would have just like had just like some roadie hold the head up to a mic and the head sang the whole song and that was the end of it. And like the roadie looks fucking disinterested. They may as well just be like dragging like an amp cabinet around or something. Like they're not happy about having to hold the head, but they're there. That's what I want.
Two other things I do want to mention, and Alice Cooper invented this stage show, or if he didn't, he's incredibly influential. At one point, like they brought out like this girl, they pulled a girl out of like a toy box, and it was a human girl. And she was kind of dressed like a ballerina, and she had this big key in her back, like a wind-up doll. And they turned the key, and she started like doing ballet dancing, like real ballet dancing. And it was really cool. And that, like, often with like theatrical shows, it either gets like really pretentious and like, you know, like come on, or it's just like bland crassness. Like bands, like I'm thinking of, I'm trying to think of like, well, a lot of the new metal bands have like stupid stage shows, just like. But Alice Cooper, maybe as like the polarity to David Bowie, in that like he had a very theatrical, artistic stage show, but the music was hard but clever. You don't see that with hard music. You often see like a rejection of art, and you know with a embrace of art, you often get a lot of frilly dilly kind of wimpy dimpy music. But Alice Cooper was able to merge, you know, what I would say, an appreciation of art and whimsy and creativity with, you know, rumbling powerful music. As a side note, during the song Feed My Frankenstein, which is kind of a dumb song from the 80s, a giant Frankenstein came out and sang in the second half. And I realized that, like, that's a big part of where Gwar comes from. I mean, I know Gwar's influenced by Alice Cooper, but even the way the Frankenstein was built was similar to a Gwar monster, like the big ones, like Cardinal Sin, the Reginator, Gorgor, like it's constructed in a similar way. And honestly, it made me a little bit of sad. It made me a little sad in that Alice Cooper is awesome, but he's not like funny. He's a little funny, but it's not like over the top funny, where Gwar is like funny. And it made me a little bit sad that like I'll never get to really experience the whimsy of Gwar ever again. It kind of bummed me out that little minute right there.
You just went from saying that this was a pretty straight ahead rock show that didn't involve a lot of craziness to there was a Frankenstein.
Well, all right. the second half of the song had a Frankenstein. It had a ballet dancer and it had an execution. Very standard.
And when were the Cirque du Soleil dancers? When did they come out?
The ballet dancer came out between the Frankenstein.
Oh man, they came like flipping down on those ribbons.
Yeah, and then they all got decapitated.
John, I'm so happy that you enjoyed this show. Yeah, I mean, you browbeated me into listening to Killer, but like I listened to it like in the worst kind of circumstance, which was like A, I was being forced
doing your taxes.
B, yeah, I was like at the office doing work, and then C, my major interaction with Alice Cooper outside of like the cartoony view of Alice Cooper that like 90s kids had in their head was that I would frequently run into his radio show and I could never square the fact that he has like a kindly old shopkeep voice as a DJ with the image of him.
His radio show isn't like, he just kind of plays like the hits that everyone already knows. Whereas like, I'm not a Little Steven fan, but like Little Steven does like deep cuts.
Little Steven's show goes crazy places. There was a time in my life where I listened to that all the time. I think it was just on when I was like going to, I don't know, like picking up my wife after work when we were younger or something like that. And I would listen to that, I would listen to the hell out of that show and just like pick up all this like wacky, weird kind of like garage stuff that he was into that was great. I mean, like it was, that thing was cheesy in its own way because like it can only take so much of him doing his like, yeah, man, voice between everything.
I have never even heard of this. What?
Little Steven Van Zandt from the E Street Band, has a show called Little Steven's Underground Garage. Which is like one of these syndicated late night radio shows. It's like, I don't know, like 2-4 hours long or something like that, where he plays, you know, just whatever he wants and then like intros it. And maybe there's some interviews and things like that. And it's the stuff that he plays, he would tend towards, like he was playing a lot of like 60s psych revival stuff that was happening in like 2002, like around the time, like the Strokes would have been too popular for him, but like the other bands that were not popular that were in the Strokes ilk, like he would play a lot of that stuff and then mixed with like a lot. And then he would go and play something from like, God, I don't know. Something from like the Lollipop Shop or some like genuine 60s, you know, garage thing. That show was cool, but like the Cooper show, it always screwed me up whenever I heard it because he would come on and he would just like, he would just have like the kindliest straight man voice. And I get like that it would probably be a bad listen if he showed up and he was just like, I'm a cartoon, but I'm being decapitated now. I couldn't square it because I'm like, Do you have your eye makeup on when you're doing this? Because I don't know if that makes it better or worse. But John, I'm so glad that you were stoked about this show.
Thank you, Adam. What one last thing is, so the merch table was selling $40 t-shirts, which were pretty cheesy. Like I don't know why some bands can't get like good t-shirt designs. They look like they were from like boardwalk shops. They were selling $40 t-shirts, $15 CDs, $30 signed CDs, and $30 vinyl records. What do you think was selling completely and the other things were not selling at all?
Oh, the signed CDs.
No, not at all.
No, I thought those old people want CDs.
The shirts, right?
Shirts, $40. I'm thinking these $40 shirts are nothing special. You can get like a super limited record or a signed CD, which is kind of cool. but people all wanted the t-shirts. I guess I'm being kind of a hard ass in that, like, you know, like these kind of people don't go to a whole lot of concerts. So for them, it really is a souvenir. Like, remember that time I went to see Alice Cooper? Like, they're not even really going to wear it that much.
Are they the ones that have like all the tour dates on the back?
Yeah, they had like literally like 15 different shirt designs, and they were all terrible.
Well, see, that is really common, I think, for bands that are like this is going to sound really reductive, like of a certain age, or like have an audience of a certain age, and the prices are always crazy. Like I saw Pill last year, and like I've always wanted I've always wanted a black shirt with the Pill logo on it, right? Just the big circle PIL in a slant logo, right? And I'm there, I'm like, hey, good, he has those shirts. But again, it was like $40, maybe more. Like it may have been fucking $60. Like it was nuts, right? And Jesus. At first I was like, oh, I guess this is like a, you know, I guess like we imported our merch from the UK and we can't, like, I don't know. I was trying to come up with some sort of reason why it was so expensive. But there were old dudes there that were like not only buying that shit without flinching, but buying that shit, taking the shirt they bought, putting it on over the existing shirt that they were wearing. And there were people there with Pill shirts on that had like tour dates on the back of it and everything. And I'm like, oh, this is a whole t-shirt subculture that does not cross over with, you know, $10 punk rock show t-shirt subculture. Like those are two different flavors.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, you John, know what I bought the other day? Can I ask how much you paid for your ticket?
The tickets were very expensive. Yeah. But it's because he was doing like this was like a, like he usually plays like outdoor like not theaters like outdoor venues. But this show was distinctly called A Night with Alice Cooper, so it was $75. And I might not have spent that, but someone gave me $75 in Ticketmaster bucks. So it ended up costing me like $3. But honestly, if I didn't have Ticketmaster bucks, I might not have went because I'm like, you know, $75. But retrospectively, I definitely would have spent $75 now. It was that awesome.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say it was a lot higher. I mean, you've seen the Stones a couple of times, right?
Yeah, the first time I saw the Stones was $150. Second time was $300. Third time I bought a $500 ticket off a scalper for like $79. Fourth time I paid $75, but out of principle, like out of principle anymore, I refuse to pay like anything more than $100 to see a band. Like really, like it's like after a point, it just seems kind of embarrassing that like you're so desperate to spend time with somebody that you'll spend like an insane amount of money. So.
I refuse to pay more than $50. The only time I paid more than that was seeing Dylan open for or no Elvis Costello open for Dylan, and Elvis Costello stole the show solo. But, yeah, it was cool.
How old was Dylan at the time? Or, like, what year was this, I guess, is that a question?
You know, one foot in the grave. This was 2009.
Okay, so I would have seen Dylan probably, I don't know, that at some time either then or, like, maybe in the 5 years before then. It was super weird. Like, he sounded like a rock tumbler. Like, just like trying to sing anything. And the weirdest thing for me, the weirdest thing was that, I mean, and this was what I'm going to say was countered by the fact that his band was fucking hot, but he didn't play guitar the whole time.
Nope. Like, he piano?
Play a little piano keyboard thing and sang. And I mean, his band was really good, so that wasn't a problem. But like, you picture Bob Dylan, you picture the guy with a guitar and a harmonica, right? And to not touch a guitar, it was weird.
Wait, did he play harmonica? I can't remember.
I feel like he did. Plays, yeah.
Like the Rolling Stone, thing.
He's famous for it.
Right. Yeah. The craziest thing was his backing band was good to me. That they were almost too good, like almost a little too polished, which I mean, when you're as rich as him and you're like basically the CEO of your company, that's your name, and you're paying all these employees, I mean, why not get guys that are super good? There wasn't enough.
Yeah, it was very much like we've hired the best.
Right. Yeah, but what was odd is they were doing new arrangements of old songs, and that's fine, but mostly thanks to his singing, or rock tumbling, as you will, Kara and I look at each other. So it's like a minute into a song, and it gets to the chorus, and we're like, is this blowing in the wind? like one of his most iconic songs. We couldn't tell. We're like, wait, did he, like, we couldn't understand his words and there was no discernible melody. We're just like, what song is this? Oh my God, this is blowing in the wind.
it was a strange experience for us, but it was also strange in that, like, you talk about the people that were like buying t-shirts at that Alice Cooper show or at the Pill show, and this like older, like boomer rock crowd and like the way they interact with things. So in this one, it was like, so we had like, this was in like a, what was this in? It was in like a little hockey arena in Toronto where we saw this, and we had floor seat or like standing area, right? So we were down general admission in front of the stage, and there were all these people that were like in the stands, of course. And as soon as Dylan came on and his band jumped into the first song, which I can't remember what it was, but whatever. But as soon as they kind of like hit the note of the first song, and it was like recognizably, you know, like some hit that they were jumping into, instantly all the like the baby boomers that were in the crowd sparked up. Yeah. And but it was like you could all of a sudden like feel like the smoke and the lighter heat and everything, like there was enough lighters that sparked up that it changed the room temperature. It was like, you're like, really? Old dudes, like, really? Like,
well, it's better than when people put on their cell phone flashlight and wave it around.
I get that, but like, they weren't, no, but it was the most stereotypical, like, here he is, light a doobie kind of thing. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
You're not being cool about this, old people.
That's exactly what John was talking about, where it's like you were talking about his, everyone looking like Slash. It's like the picture of, like, when someone flips on VH1 and they're like some normal, you know, middle America person like me, but not me. And it's like, that's, oh, look at that guy. He's so cool. He's got his, he's still doing the trucker hat thing or whatever. You know, like you look at how hard he's trying. He's got rhinestones on the pockets of his jeans.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
What?
So, I mean, speaking of weird, like merch and stuff at shows, I bought something the other day that I'm really stoked about having bought at a show. So I went to, I realize we're not actually jumping into the news part of this thing yet, but whatever.
Screw the news.
Sucks.
Whatever.
So, last week we had kind of like had the benefit of having two really good shows that had come into the Niagara area. And it was right in the middle of this weird controversy, and it took all of my power not to be the guy to go onto Facebook and to browbeat people into coming to these shows out of guilt. So on the Wednesday night at the arena that sits in St. Catharines, there's a band that's playing there that is a big Canadian kind of like radio rock band called Headley. Now, I don't really know anything about them, and I couldn't tell you what one of their songs are, but they're one of these bands basically that got Me Too'd. So they, you know, there was all these like sexual assault allegations that came out about them, and venues kind of left and right have been canceling their shows, and the band's been getting shit everywhere and all this kind of stuff. And so they were in town on Wednesday, and the show was never canceled here. But the reasoning, as I understand it, for it not being canceled is that it's one of these shows that was booked by, like, I don't know, like, say, like, Live Nation or something, right? One of these big booker things. And if you're, like, the in-town arena and you just go willy-nilly cancel, like, a Live Nation show, like, you potentially jeopardize your business relationship with, like, one of the only people that's booking big acts. And, like, so it was one of these things where, like, they didn't cancel it, but there was a lot of talk online about how, like, no one should go to this show. But at the same week, on the day before, we had Weaves in town. Weaves is this like art punk band from Toronto, fantastic kind of vocals in this in the group from I'm blanking on her name right now, Jasmine Burke. Their vocalist is amazing, and their fucking guitar playing and everything is insane. But anyway, so we have this like so one of like the most kind of like celebrated independent rock bands in Canada, Weaves, was there on Tuesday, and then on Thursday, which also happens to be International Women's Day, Lito Piñera was in town, So Lido is the artist that won the Polaris Prize last year, which is like the Canadian version of like the Mercury Prize, I guess, from the UK. It's like the biggest artistic biggest artistic music prize that you can win. So Lido is this like indigenous Colombian Canadian musician that puts together these like crazy, like completely in Spanish, like really like politically aggressive kind of like art pop stuff. So we have this week where on the Wednesday, the band that is accused of, some horrible malfeasance against women is in town. And the day before and the day after, you have like two of like the most celebrated, like artistically celebrated female acts in the country playing. And it took all of my power not to just like sit around on Facebook for the whole weekend and then like Monday and just be like, hey, dipshits, all of you who are out there complaining about Headley being in town on Wednesday, maybe instead of also like do that, sure, but hey, come to these shows that not a lot of people are going to go to, but happen to celebrate, you know, essentially the polar opposite of that. Like, you know, put your money where your mouth is here and don't just boycott that show you weren't going to go to anyways, but maybe go to one of these smaller, you know, independently run shows that actually features something good and positive. Like, So I didn't do that because fighting with people on Facebook does not really work into my schedule, but God, I wanted to do that. But in any case, the Lido show, the one on Thursday, two acts that were playing, and like both of them blew me away, and it was crazy. So like Lido herself was great, but the opening was a hip hop act from Toronto, and what's her name, Sydanie, like Sydanie, I guess. I don't really know how you pronounce it, but you know, like solo kind of like hip hop thing, and I can't remember the last time that I've seen like good hip hop live, but it was great. Like, and just seeing acts that were not your typical kind of like, here we're four dudes in a rock band kind of play, especially on what happened to be International Women's Day, coincidentally, was like amazing. I came away from that show super energized. I'm like that was, this was just nice just to go out and just to see people just like do their thing and not have it be particularly tied up in any kind of one genre or scene or anything like that. Like, it was really cool. But anyways, coming back to merch, Lido. So she is like a visual artist outside of being like a musician. So outside of the normal stuff that you could buy, you can get CDs and shirts and stuff like that. She had a bunch of shirts that she had screen printed herself with like weird shit on them. Then she had a bunch of like artwork and drawings and things like that, which I guess will kind of play into the one story that we're going to talk about in a minute. But then she had a bunch of candles where like she had gone and like made like handmade like these candles, like, and I don't know if it was like particularly like that, like a, like, I don't want to go and say it was like, oh, it was an indigenous Colombian craft thing, because I don't actually fucking know that, but it was like handmade stuff by the artist kind of thing, right? And they were cool, and I'm like, you know what, I have enough t-shirts and things like that, I want some of these candles, these are neat. And they are now sitting here next to my record player, and I'm like, that was cool. Like, I liked being able to go in and to buy something weird and unique from a show and like still give them some money, but you know, not have it just be the normal thing you walk out of there with.
They might be giants. I like that. Great merch. I bought a license plate holder this last time. It says my other car is They Might Be Giants. And I have a foam finger of theirs from the last time I saw them before that.
I feel like bands don't have as much weird merch as I would hope that they do.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'll see, like, there was a band called there's a band from, I don't know, somewhere in Ontario called the Sun Parlor Players, and they play kind of like an alt country type of thing, but like really super rootsy at times. And they've had like tracks on it. They had a track on an EP that they put out a few years ago that was nothing more than them reading out like the ingredients for making like a preserve to a drum beat. And I was at one of their shows and they were selling like jam, like they had gone and like like mason jars with some sort of like food that they had preserved themselves from whatever farm that they were from at the show. God. And they're like, this is great. This is what I want
to
buy.
That's fantastic. I've always wanted to do outdoor velour coffee mugs because I've seen a lot of bands do, like I used to have a Murder by Death pint glass, and I've had some other bands pint glasses. Because we're not a hard drinking band, but we are a very caffeinated band. And I know like Descendants and some other bands do that, but it's just not practical to go out of town with a
huge boxes of mugs.
Yeah. Probably won't happen.
you guys know who the first artist to sing a recipe to sparse music was?
Frank Zappa? I don't know.
The Cure. They have a track off their first album. What's it called? I think it's called
The Cure. Betty Crocker.
The Cure has a song where they sing a cake recipe.
Really?
Someone
have I not heard that?
The cake out in the rain.
Oh God!
Now, like you only know if you actually like really listen.
Well,
to
hold
it.
On, like on Boys Don't Cry. You mean?
Well, Boys Don't Cry is technically a compilation, but I think it's on Boys Don't Cry, unless it's on Three Imaginary Boys.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, it is. I need to know.
I'll look it up, and maybe we'll know by the end of the podcast. Yeah. But you guys want to get into some mail before then?
Sure.
Yeah, you know what? Let's flip this here. Play a song, and then we'll do mail, and then we'll keep going.
Okay, I'll play Alice Cooper's Halo of Flies, proto-goth. Proto metal, or actually, well, metal kind of already existed. Anyway, it's a great song. It's one of the best songs ever. This is the Alice Cooper Band doing Halo of Flies.
Middle-aged lady She really came as no surprise, but I still did destroy her, and I will smash Halo World. Plans. You never will understand.
Okay, we're back. That was Alice Cooper. What's in the mail?
Okay, we got a lot. Listen, everybody take cover because everybody's taking hits, Adam. You're taking hits. I'm taking hits. A lot of common writers are taking hits. We've got battle in the mail section. This is from Liverpool Neil. And Liverpool Neil often writes in to tell us how crappy we are, but I think we actually might have made him mad. I think he's actually mad this time. He says, "Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here, and I'm pissed off. Here I am sitting here thinking deeply about the letters I write in. I listen to a show and write in with comments and reflections. Or I think of a premise, research, and then explain it in detail, like I did about the one with the differences between black and colored vinyl. I try to educate and inform. And what happens when you get my letters? You read them, giggle, mumble some nonsense, and go on to the next thing. But then some noob writes in with, what about band names, eh? And you go off for 30 minutes on it. WTF. So no more. From now on, my letters will be like the rest. So that being said, what color sugar is more punk rock, white or brown? There you go. Talk about it for 30 minutes. Not happy, signed Liverpool Neil.
Oh, my God, Neil. Oh, Neil. We're sorry. My God, I should have edited all that shit out about the band names.
I don't remember. I mean, if it makes up for it, I don't remember that conversation at all.
Must have been really deep.
Oh no. Wow. Oh fuck no, wait, I do, because it was about that neck band, that wrist band. Shit. Yeah.
It didn't
have, oh Neil, didn't I'm sorry, a, Neil.
Yeah, didn't AJJ get involved in that conversation? I don't.
They may have. Let's not relive it. We're gonna reopen the wound.
No,
here.
30 more minutes. 30 minutes later. I think Neil just wants to be a guest on the podcast, is what I'm hearing.
I don't know if that would, like, I mean, on the one hand, that would be great. On the other hand, would that destroy the mystique? Because when I picture Liverpool Neil, or at least I envision him speaking, all I envision is John's half-hearted British accent that he sometimes reads the stuff in. And Crikey. If he doesn't sound like that, it's going to break me. I'm not going to take it seriously. No, Neil, don't be mad. You're the only reason why
you get up in the morning.
Why I'm doing this still.
Don't. Yeah. Oh, I do enjoy his letters for sure. Even though I just listen to them and don't get to respond to them most of the time. This makes me
okay,
sad.
Well, Liverpool
makes me
Neil.
Sad.
Like Adam, you know how like when Liverpool writes in, like we laugh about it and stuff, and like he's mad, haha, that's so funny. He's not actually mad. You remember? We don't need to get specific because I don't want to inflame anything. But remember, like a number of years ago, we used to have a guy write in that would get like furious, and we thought he was joking, but he was like serious.
Oh, that like, guy be, like, got like, more like, mad though. Yeah, that wasn't a good.
What
idea.
What was his name or the name he wrote?
No, don't call him out. He might still be here, like lurking.
like
Chinatown.
He'd be like. He's like last week I listened to the podcast and I got so mad about what you said about Green Day that I punched a hole through the wall. And we were like cracking up. But it turned out he was like serious. Like he got so mad that he like punched a hole through the wall. You know, so I hope Liverpool Neil is all good fun. I really don't want to actually piss off Liverpool Neil because I'm a big fan. So Liverpool Neil, please keep writing in and we will give you the amount of consideration that you deserve.
His walls are
that?
Swiss cheese at this point.
This is from Dion. Hello. I loved Adam's response to what's the subject line? Back to the Beach Fest. Hi. I loved Adam's response to this. Three friends and I had a slightly stronger reaction. We booked tickets from South America to Back to the Beach Fest. Adam, Mike, can you just remind the listeners what Back to the Beach Fest is?
Back to the Beach Fest is an event that is happening in, is it Long Beach or Hermosa Beach? Or I don't know, somewhere, some beach.
Same area, pretty much.
Somewhere in California. And they are bringing in a bunch of ska punk bands, like third wave ska punk bands, 1998, basically. They are bringing 1998 back to perform on this beach. And it is one of these events that on paper sounds really good until you think about it too much and realize that it's not 1998 anymore. And everyone is now fat and old and weird, including the audience.
Woo, Adam, you're doubling down. So here comes the letters. Anyways, I loved Adam's responses. Three friends and I had a slightly stronger reaction, and we booked tickets from South America to attend. Total nostalgia purchase. Super excited about it. But we totally get the conflict of emotions of being 15 to 20 years old. Oh, I'm sorry. We totally get the conflict of emotions of being 15 to 20 years late to the party. Having missed a lot of these bands due to geography and now being of the means to do it, we're going. Rather late to the party than never there. Individually, none of these bands would get me on a plane, but the full collection of bands is a flight of fancy and a joy to attend. My 40-year-old knees are going to take a beating. I'm going to have sand problems, but I'm going to be very happy. I'm going to be a very happy old dude just to be there. And John can F right off with his stupid Hawkwind and Nelvins comments. Those bands are great, but they're also not the point of this. He could angle some of his classic reggae nods at this rather than just being an asshole about it. I don't even remember talking about Hawkwind and the Melvins during this comment section.
You do it like a nervous tick. A few things here. One, we have listeners from South America. That's amazing. I don't know. Send us, what do they got down there? Rubber? Send us rubber.
Some coca leaves.
Don't let me talk you out of going to this show.
He's saying he's going.
Oh, I mean, go, but don't let me make you feel bad about it at all. No, I mean, again, if I was near this, I would totally go to this. I'm just more like not actually in the position where I'm going to have the choice whether to go to this or not. I'm more just having an existential crisis about being old. So no, but Buck, go to this.
Yeah, wish it was 1998.
Especially if there are bands that you haven't had a chance to see. You can't go back in time unless you can, but you probably can't. So if you can't, this is the best chance you're going to have. So fucking go have fun. I'm cool with that.
Unless you can,
you know who the first band, you know who was the first band to write a song called I Want to Be Old? The Cure. Anyway, Dion continues. I do agree that the two official headliners aren't that strong, but everything below it is tons of fun. Anyways, back to the beach, kids. See you there. And that's from Dion.
I like how he said he might have sand problems. Like, I don't know what that means. Like serious dune style sand problems. Like you're going to walk and it's going to make too many vibrations and the worms will come. Like, what does that mean? Sand problems.
Like sand in his underwear. That's what I'm thinking. Oh,
that's way less cool than mine.
But then the worms will come.
This is from Danny. Danny says, the thing you guys didn't really consider when lambasting Back to the Beach Fest is that ska is very alive in 2018. This is particularly true in Southern California, and it's not because of sad old white neckbeards reliving their teens. It is almost entirely because of a vital majority of Mexican and Mexican-Americans in their teens and 20s selling out ska shows all over Los Angeles every week. And yes, of course, a potpourri of sad old white people reliving their teens, such as myself, are there. I understand that out of context from the current pulse of the ska scene that the lineup of Back to the Beach brings to mind only suburban 90s MTV ska. But many of these bands have only been able to reunite in the last few years because younger Spanish-speaking bands have been busting onto the scene, building audiences, and feeding off that energy back into a revival for the national ska punk bands that have inspired them. Case in point, there is already an annual ska fest in Los Angeles every year since 2008 called Ska Wars. It brings together about 20 ska bands every single year. Usually 3 to 4 national or international ska bands and 15 or so Latino ska bands. If that festival has enough of an audience to keep going since 2008, Back to the Beach for just one weekend with only one national and legacy acts, with only national legacy acts, is a much bigger deal than you are aware. And if you still don't believe me, Real Big Fish, Mad Caddies, The Boss Tones, Big D, Suicide Machine, Save Ferris, Pilfers, Buck09, We Are the Union, Streetlight, and Agrolites are some of the bands who have announced new albums for 2018 from Danny.
This confirms something we've talked about. It totally does.
What's that?
We have in the past, like years ago, I don't know if it was years ago, it was a while ago, we were musing about fourth wave ska at some point, either here or, I don't know, some other conversation I was in on the internet. And the assumption that we had was that there totally is a viable fourth wave, but it's not as a lot of people on the internet had decided that, like, fucking Bomb the Music Industry was fourth wave ska, which, I mean, I love Bomb and Jeff Rosenstock and everything like that, but that sounded kind of like a cop-out. Like, it was, you know, we're going to give this one band that is doing something interesting artistically and is, like, tangentially related to the ska scene, we're going to go give them the genre. Like, it seemed kind of cheap, right? But we were having conversation about it at some point, and the exact point that we brought up was that there seems to be and we had no way of confirming this. Well, I guess we could have, but we didn't. It seems to be that there was a pretty viable scene, but it was a Latin American scene. And that there was a lot of stuff going on there, but it wasn't reaching, you know, it wasn't ending up in our inboxes from a publicity standpoint or anything like that. And that was the assumption because, you know, every once in a while we'll see lineups for things like I've never seen the lineup show up before for this one that the writer mentioned. But there's a massive ska festival that happens in Victoria, BC every year. And you look at and they just announced the one for this year and you look at it and yeah, there's a couple headliners that you'd expect. You know, the Boston's I think are playing it this year, but there's like 70 bands on that list and I've never heard of any of them. Right. And it's clear that there's something going on there. And the assumption that we had at the time was like, yeah, there's totally like a big Latin American scene, but we couldn't really peg it. So here you go. Someone has written in and has been like, fuck you. There's a big Latin American scene. So A, that is amazing and fantastic. And I'm glad to hear that. B, write back in and tell us who are some of these bands? Like what are the top handful of bands that we should go listen to here?
Because yeah, let's do it. Let us re-embrace ska. We should have the people tell us all the best Latin American ska bands and we'll like devote an entire podcast to it.
Because by all means, take ska away from the old neckbeard white dudes, right? Like whatever, who cares about them? I want to hear about these kind of like cool up and coming bands.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know where to start with them. So letter writer guy whose name I can't remember because I don't know if John said it. Write back in.
It was Danny.
Danny. Fucking Danny, come on.
Make us come a mixtape. Or a Spotify playlist.
No, don't send us a Spotify playlist. You can just write it out with words and we can use Google and go find it. You don't have to go to any effort here. But like I'm curious like who some of the bands that are doing interesting things in that scene are. Because it is so like I feel so shitty having a conversation about ska with someone and my point of reference is Real Big Fish. Because at that point I'm exactly like someone that let's say it's like 1998. And I'm talking about punk rock with someone and this person is like, oh yeah, like we saw the Damned back in the day or something like that. And I'm like, no, there's punk bands now. And they're like, no, there isn't. Right. Like, I don't want to be that guy. So please.
And are you saying it's as cool to see the Damned in 1978 as it is to see the Real Big Fish in 1998? Are you saying those are equally
cool?
Yes, he
is.
No, I'm trying to, no, I'm saying that me referencing, fuck, I don't know what I'm saying. Don't equate those two things. I'm saying that I don't want to be like an out of touch old person. So please send a list. I want to check this out.
Think of your grandpa's. Make your grandpa's hip with your kids. Yeah. One last letter for today. This is from Jay from Pittsburgh. Hi, guys. The idea that Fugazi played $5 shows is not entirely accurate and is taken on an unfortunate life of its own beyond the band. I have no doubt that they played many $5 shows, but I saw Fugazi many times in the 90s, and none of those shows were $5. They were generally $8 or so, with the exception of one of the times I saw them at Carnegie Mellon, which was outside and a fundraiser that was donation-based, but I gave more than $5. The other thing is that Ian owns Discord, which was making good money when Fugazi was active in the alternative 90s heyday. Fugazi were selling a lot of records. 20 years later, I think $10 is more than reasonable for a show. It's not like Discord hasn't raised the prices to match inflation over the years. And Liverpool Neil's flat out wrong. The fall effing sucked. Fugazi aren't or weren't pretentious at all. They were trying to do their own thing, playing non-traditional venues and trying to be inclusive. The music is amazing. They were an unbelievable live band. I've met all of those dudes a few times now, and they couldn't have been more gracious. And that's Jay from Pittsburgh.
Jay, I don't know if you heard the earlier letter from Neil, but would prefer if you didn't piss him off.
Yeah.
Well, why can't we all just get along? Can't we all just get along? You can write us at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And we love getting your mail, critiques, criticisms. You know, we don't always agree with the criticisms, but we try to do our best. And when you have a valid point, I think we admit that when people have valid points. So listen, are we? It's already been an hour. We haven't even touched the news at all. What are we doing today?
Okay, let's. We will look over the list of news, all of us, right now, and we will bring up some of them and speak about them in shortness after we play some sort of song. Let's do that.
Is that me? Okay.
I mean, sure, it is.
All right. Since I have no shame, what I'm going to do right now, I have no shame, and also I'm the producer of this podcast, I'm going to play a 3-minute medley montage of my band Doppelpopolis, our new EP. I'm going to play a little bit of all six of the songs cross-faded into each other. So here is my other band, Doppelpopolis.
Fire!
Welcome.
And that was Greg shamelessly hijacking the podcast to play something that he was involved in. Okay, so we have a handful of things that happened this week that we're going to talk about in brief, because I mean none of them are super drastic, or some of them require you to go and to look them up yourself, because they are visual in nature. So I'm just gonna pick one, and then we can just like toss the ball around here and see who wants to pick something to talk about here. So first of all,
Adam, have you ever seen The Room by Tommy Wiseau?
We're just gonna talk about random things that have nothing to do with this.
You, like, you say we're gonna toss the ball around. If anyone's seen The Room, listening, they'll get the joke. Like we're tossing the ball around like they did it in The Room. Anyway, continue, Adam.
You know who the first band was to sing a song about tossing a ball around? The Cure. No.
Okay.
That's John's joke, I suppose.
But I like that you killed it, because I didn't think it was that good. All right, here we go.
You know who first wrote a song about killing something? The Cure, Killing an Arab, first album, Three Imaginary Boys.
That's one of those songs that, like totally out of context in, like, the post 9/11 era. Was
sounds really, totally racist.
Really yeah. Weird, eh? Hey?
But it's actually, okay. You know, it's about the book The Stranger.
No.
By Camus.
It's about
that's what
that
song's about.
I just heard a glass falling over.
Killing an Arab by The Cure is basically the book The Stranger by Albert Camus. And the point is, the guy kills an Arab on the beach just because he can, and he has no emotion. It's one of the first books to have a character that is possibly a sociopath or a psychopath in first-person perspective.
I did not know that. The sound you heard was a glass... coaster that I'm using that had stuck to the bottom of the glass of rye that I'm drinking and fell off
that.
When I picked
hate
it up.
That.
Yeah, I mean, you and your rye mishaps. I mean, they never end. Okay, Jesse Michaels has released a new art collection. So for the past few years, he's been creating and releasing paintings, often in collections centered around different themes and concepts. So his work often features punk rock icons, especially in this case. So he's painted before. He's painted the Ramones and the Clash and Bad Brains. And he regularly creates pieces with noir themes, as well as paintings of lyrics from his bands. So there's a new collection of these that are online, and you should go check them out because they're kind of cool. Search for Jesse Michaels on Punk News, I guess, and you can find it. Find the link to it. I don't know if you guys had a chance to check this out. John, we at the Punk News Summer Soiree gave away a Jesse Michaels painting.
We gave away an original Jesse Michaels painting. And honestly, I mean, we raised a couple of bucks for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. But I feel as though the audience didn't really appreciate how awesome it would be to have an original Jesse Michaels painting. And I think we should have got a lot more money than we got.
So the way that he does these, I guess, bears some mentioning. So at least I was looking through the list of the ones that he's got here, right? And it with a lot of these paintings, it looks like what he does is he'll go and he'll do a design, like a layout of a painting. And then he will paint 40 of those based on the layout. And then he'll wreck the layout and just get rid of it and start anew. So you're not buying a print. You're buying like actual paintings in a lot of these cases. But they're sort of like one of a series where he's like working over a subject, I guess. So, I mean, so I was looking at it and like, there's a painting he has of Joey Ramone here that I'm seriously considering buying. Like, it's
yeah,
great.
That's super cool.
I recommend. I have three Jesse Michaels paintings, and I have some from before he started doing series. I've got unique ones, but honestly, they are so cool. And like, it's I hate to call it cheap art, but it's cheap art. But not only is it cheap art, it's amazing art by an iconic person. Everyone should go buy his stuff. It's awesome, Adam. You won't be sorry.
Yeah. So in any case, there's a lot of
One of the biggest regrets I have is when I lived in the Bay Area, he had two art shows. And he was selling like gigantic things for like $400. And at the time, I was in law school, so $400 was like a lot to me. But man, I wish I could have went back in time and bought one of those. Like, they were so cool.
Yeah. So, anyways, go take a look at these. I mean, we can't talk too much about paintings on an audio podcast, but we talk about music, so you know, whatever. Anything on the list here? People want to make mention of? People want to talk about?
There's two things I want to mention. I'll mention the first thing. Boots Riley's film. We've been talking about it a fair amount. The film is called Sorry to Bother You. Boots Riley of the Coup. He's getting distribution by something called a Pernia Pictures, which actually like is like a big movie company. They're distributing the film. Annapurna Pictures. They actually distributed some ones that won Academy Awards or Oscars or something like that. Anyway, they put out the first trailer for his movie. It stars Lakeith Stanfield, who was in that show. I think he's in the show Empire. It's also got Danny Glover in it. It's got Christopher from Mr. Show. What's his last name? From Mr. Show, Chris, one of the two Mr. Shows, not Bob Odenkirk, the other guy.
The other guy.
Oh, David Cross?
David Cross. What I was saying Christopher Cross.
Yeah, like,
David
what?
Cross.
Chris Christopherskin.
It's got a lot of cool actors in it, and this, I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch this trailer, but man, this movie is looking awesome. The movie's about a telemarketer that he's an African-American guy. And Danny Glover says, you know, you'll sell more if you speak white. So he starts speaking with David Cross's voice. And then he becomes a power seller. And then the movie just like flips its wig and goes into magical realism. And this movie looks so cool. And the trailer's only confirming that. And I'm excited for this.
Yeah, it looks pretty wild. I laughed quite a few times.
Yeah, this. I mean, I'm not a film person. And I will rarely clue into something like this and really want to see it, but I really want to see this. It looks super fun. I have a minor Danny Glover story in that he keeps getting arrested in Niagara Falls.
What?
Danny Glover is, I mean, outside of being Danny Glover, one of his things is he is a huge labor organizer, and he'll go out and participate in protests for workers' rights and things like that. So he's done a lot of work with I think Unite, which is I think one of like the big labor organizing groups. So in Niagara Falls, because we're a tourist destination, there's a lot of hotels here. A lot of our hotels are filled with low wage, non-unionized housekeepers and things like that. So like he was in town to help, you know, drum up, you know, union signups and protest the owners and things like that. And I'm pretty sure he either was arrested a couple times in the city or whatever, but like he was in the paper a lot here for a while because he kept showing up and getting arrested. It was great.
Well, I'm glad he's getting arrested that way, and not like
he's getting arrested for good shit. He's not
Tommy Lee or something.
He didn't show up and like kill a clown or something. That's illegal here, by the way. I don't know if that was
that's fine.
I don't know where you are, but yeah, you can't kill clowns. So, anywho, that looks really cool. Anything else on this story list we want to talk about?
So, my brother-in-law is moving to Saudi Arabia, actually. So I was thinking we should talk about that. In the news. Yeah. Okay. So, as detailed by the New York Times, Saudi Arabia recently began allowing public music performances within its boundaries. In June 2017, Prince Mohammed bin Salman assumed the crown prince title and has been making some moves to change the historically conservative country. He recently made public music performances legal, including a 2017 performance by Yanni. And some Egyptian singer named Tamer Hosni. This is pretty crazy. Like, I didn't know that, like, public music performances could be banned. But I did have a music student once, or I should say he wasn't a music student because his parents wouldn't let him go to music class. And he had to sit outside in the hall with a book while we had music class. And it made me fucking furious. Anyway, what do you guys think about this?
Well, the other important thing though is not only are they now allowing public music performances, however, there are strict laws: no dancing or swaying. People are segregated by gender, and you have to wear modest clothes at the concert. What is equally interesting, perhaps, is going off Twitter, which I don't know how valid that is or not. There were generally three reactions. The first reaction was, "This is great. I'm glad we can finally get live music in Saudi Arabia." The second was, this is pathetic in that you can't sway at a music concert. That's ridiculous. And the third, which was, there was a fellow, they named him in the New York Times article, we won't name him. He says, I spit on Tamer Hosni, and I spit on those who have given him the go-ahead. So not everybody in Saudi Arabia is happy that they are having live music.
Hmm. Yeah. So my brother-in-law is moving to Jeddah, which is, I think, less than like 50 miles away from Mecca. So Jeddah, it's on the water. It's on the Red Sea. And we're like he just sprung this on everybody. Like, he's moving him and his wife, who's from Thailand. He's been all over the world teaching at these English language schools. And apparently it pays pretty well. It must, for him to move there. But as a music fan who likes going to see live music, that's kind of a deal breaker for me, that if there was no live music. And also, if you couldn't, how do you stand perfectly still at a concert? How do you do it?
I'll tell you, because if you don't, you get thrown in the jam, yeah. The clink. So the I clink. Ain't moving.
That's what they call it there. That's it's an Arabic word.
Let me tell you, as a disinterested older person, it is very easy to stand perfectly still at a concert sometimes. I had a family friend who was living in Jeddah for a year, I think.
Yeah. And how was it?
Well, I mean, so she is what was her profession? Is that she was a speech like a child speech therapist, and it was like one of the crown princes, of which there are many, had some child that had a speech issue or whatever, and they needed someone to come in and do that kind of like speech therapy with them. So, she got the gig and, moved to Saudi Arabia for a year. And
damn.
I have no way of knowing this because I haven't asked, but I assume probably made pretty good money being like the, something or other for the royalty. Yeah. But
wow,
is no longer there, because I imagine that it is not the kind of thing that that especially if it is not your culture and you're not used to the restrictions there, that you do for very long.
And you're a woman.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, they just opened up like the permission to drive or something like that, did they?
Yeah.
So
yes.
So this was before that. So it was probably pretty restrictive. But I'm not speaking firsthand, so I don't make too many assumptions or anything. But yeah, it was definitely Jeddah where she lived. So.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's like that's like where people from Saudi Arabia go to vacation. They go to Jeddah. It's like people here going to Florida or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, it's the beach. Crazy.
So I guess one other thing that we should probably just touch on, because it's coming up and it's coming out and people should be excited about it, is that Hot Snakes Records comes out on what, Friday of when we're recording this? I think it comes out on Friday?
Yeah.
March 16th. Yeah, okay, tomorrow the fucking Hot Snakes record comes out. It is, so Jericho Sirens is the name of the record. It is their first in what, 14 years?
Oh, man.
Is it 14 years? It was a while.
So it's been a long time. Too long.
Yeah. So I'm here with a reading / listening assignment for you, the people. So first of all, there's a couple songs from this that are, I mean, they're streaming online as of we're recording this, but by the time anyone hears this, you could just go listen to the album in full from wherever place you want to. It's good. You should go listen to it. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, Hot Snakes fan that I have encountered in any form of media is a Canadian music writer and broadcaster named Vish Khanna. And Vish, he's written for Exclaim, and he hosts a radio or a television show, actually, that you can see online called Long Night that is broadcast in Toronto. And he has a podcast that does amazing in-depth interviews with artists, which is called Creative Control. And this is Creative Control spelt with K's, as in the Hot Snake song Creative Control.
Yeah. Yeah. I've listened to that podcast.
Yeah. And so he is not in the same way that, like, I've got my little Some Party Thing, which is named after a Constantine song and, would really just be about the Constantines if I could fill it with that. I get the feeling that like Vish is doing the same thing with Hot Snakes, where that band has just like crept in and informed his entire like journalistic output. And he has an incredibly enthusiastic review of the record that's at Exclaim that you can go check out. But B, on the Creative Control podcast, he has an interview, I think, with Fulberg right now. Although at the same week, and it was weird because I looked at my phone and my phone told me, you know, I don't know what podcast app you people use or if you've ever listened to a podcast before, but they, I looked at my phone and it gave me a push notification like, oh, a new episode of this is available. And like on the same day that the new episode of Creative Control came out where they were talking with Rick Fulberg, the episode of Turned Out a Punk came out where they were talking to John Rice. So there is... And I may have that flipped and maybe one of them talked to the other one, but whatever. There's a shit ton of like Hot Snakes related media from people that I think are genuinely good interviewers and music personalities right now. So, you know, go listen to Damien's Termed Out of Punk. Go listen to Visha's Creative Control. And there's a lot of stuff about the new Hot Snakes record on both of them. So go do that.
So good. So good.
Yeah. Anyways, any of these other stories anyone care about right now?
Nah.
Anyone? No. It is quiet. All right. So I enjoy these shows where we don't actually talk too much about the music news because no one actually wants to hear that. So
here's the question, actually, Adam. I'm glad you. Do people want to hear just shoot the shit, or do people actually want to hear some structure? I know I love just shooting the shit, but I know when I turn into a podcast and they just start talking about bullshit, like I get annoyed. What do the listeners want?
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of do like shooting the shit too, but then like I listen to Marc Maron and I'm like, okay, I can skip 12 to 15 minutes ahead till the interview actually starts. And then I go skip through it. Are people skipping 45 minutes into each of these episodes just till we get to the news? I want to know what's going on or what was going on a week ago.
I'm curious about that myself. And there are shows that I listen to that are entirely built around shooting the shit with no structure at all. And they will joke about that a lot where they're, you know, they'll start talking and they'll be like, yeah, the show starts in 12 minutes or something, but there isn't an actual show that starts. I'm curious. We are approaching episode 400 of the Punk News Podcast. So if any of you people that if you are the kind of person that an hour and 10 minutes into this show is still listening to this show, then we probably want your input about what you like about this or don't like about this so we can structure it in a way that makes you happy because.
Do we give a shit about what people want or are we just doing?
I give a shit about people who are an hour and 10 minutes in and are still here. Those people that start listening and just
people that subscribe,
just listen, John, just until they get off and then they turn it off. I don't want those people. Those people are perverts. They're sick. I don't want to listen to those people. But the people that are still here. Oh, fuck. All right. Here we go. Podcast at punknews.org is how you can write us. Please don't write us about that joke I made. Here's a song. So this is from a guy from Lethbridge, Alberta named Jay Blissett. He has a garage rock act from there that has these Elvis Costello vibes to it, a lot of like early Buzzcocks vibes in it, but he has this whole weird aesthetic to it. So he refers to himself as a tropical glam eccentric. And what that means is that when you see Jay, he is wearing big floral Hawaiian kind of shirts. There are pineapples everywhere. The his whole motif is this kind of like this 50s, 60s kind of like Vegas, Honolulu, Havana aesthetic. And it's super fun and super wacky. And so he has this whole thing that plays into these like crazy power pop songs that he plays. And the only place where that aesthetic starts to kind of creep into the music outside out front of the visuals is that he's playing a lot of these songs on his 12-string guitar. And that gives it just a little bit of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here, Greg, Mr. Musician? A little bit of, I don't want to say like island rhythm because that sounds totally dumb, but a little bit of...
feel the island rhythms.
Yeah, right? Like not that, right? But a little bit of little bit of Honolulu in there it comes in from it. So, anywho, this is a song from Jay Blissett. It's off of a cassette that he just had come out on Toronto's Pleasance Records called Until I Go Blind. The song is called A Series of Observations. And if you go to Punk News, we premiered the video for this, and it totally has pineapples in it, which is fits the whole motif. So anyways, this is Jay Blissett and A Series of Observations on Pleasance.
Call the bullshit, man, I'd understand. Not a confession, this is a series of observations. The process probably wasn't painless, life could stop there anyhow. There's nothing wrong with humor, it's the only thing that keeps you sane. You can't say I'm not a victim, 100,000 people probably feel the same. Ugly hatch freak, upset that shit wouldn't score. Someone else's problem, who cleans the blood off the shore? I don't care what I'm supposed to, I never even knew her name. But she was 16, that's great, there's probably a lot of social cost to blame. I swear I wouldn't do that, not a heartless monster to who. See why indifference always seems to bother you. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun until I go blind. Let me stare into the sun.
Okay, we're back. I guess we're done.
I'm tired and old.
I gotta wake up at like 5 and go to work, so we should.
Jesus
be really
Christ!
Here.
Are you on Eastern or Central?
I'm Eastern.
Yeah, you better go to bed.
I should. I mean, I'm going to work at 5 because I feel like I should get more done tomorrow. So it's really going to be a challenge to actually wake up, look at my clock, and go really get up. But that's my plan.
Don't send us any playlists. We don't want them. We don't want no Spotify playlist.
Mixtapes, actual tapes. This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at Greg@VelourUndergroundStudios.com.